The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now in graphic audio.
Tell you what, darling. Why don't me and you go on up and join my brother and that big old gal he's with?
I never thought you'd ask. I was beginning to think you didn't like me.
Well, how about getting a bottle to take up with us?
Never mind the bottle, miss. You won't be needing it. None of them will.
What do you mean I'll not be needing me a bottle of whiskey?
You won't be needing it because you'll either be going back to McAllister with me to stand trial for bank robbery and murder, or you'll be dead.
You're a funny man, mister. You give me a good laugh. So what makes you think we held up a bank in McAllister, huh? Where is McAllister anyway? There ain't none of us ever even been there.
Oh, you've been there, all right. I know that because I trailed the five of you from there to here.
Who the hell are you anyway?
The name is Falcon McAllister. You take your guns out of your holsters and put them on the floor.
I would call that bold talk for someone who's not only outnumbered 4-1, but who ain't even holding the pistol. I'll tell you right now, the only way my gun is coming out of my holster is when I pull it to kill you. Now, boys! Good God, I seen it, but I ain't believing it. Are they dead?
They're all dead.
How do you know they're all dead?
Because I didn't have time not to kill them.
And Mr. Hanlon, I'm surprised at you paying good money for a map like this. Where did you buy this?
I didn't buy it nowhere! I drawed that there map my own self. Tells you exactly where the gold is.
You're telling me you know where the gold is?
Yes, sir, that's exactly what I'm telling you.
Do you have any proof that you found the mine? I mean, other than this map.
Oh, yes, sir, I got me some proof. These here's nuggets I took from the mine. And there's a lot more where these came from.
This is gold. This is real gold.
Well, yes, sir, that's what I've been trying to tell you all along.
Is it true? Is it true that the old coot had a map to a gold mine?
I don't know. Why are you asking?
Because if the map is real, I know where it is.
Where is this big vein of gold supposed to be in here?
Well, there. It's not a vein of gold, but it is gold. It looks like Mr. Hanlon already gathered it up.
Did he dig them out of this cave? Where'd they come from?
Not here. They were mined somewhere else and moved here.
I have a
Get down!
McAllister! How's it feel to know you're about to die?
Mr. McAllister, you all right?
Don't miss Eagles 15, Slaughter of Eagles. Available now in graphic audio.
And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Forest Kingdom Saga, Hawk and Fisher. Narrated by Terence Aselford, with performances by Danny Gabigan, Ren Casey, Yasmin Toison, Scott McCormick, Andy Clements, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Michael John Casey, Eric Messner, James Konacek, Michael Glenn, Tim Getman, Joe Brack, Nanette Savard, Christopher Sheeran, Richard Rowan, Joseph Thornhill, Thomas Keegan, Lily Beacon, Dylan Lynch, M.B. Van Dorn, and Mort Shelby. Hawk and Fisher, Book 5, Guard Against Dishonor. There are bad cities, there are worse cities, and then there's Haven. According to popular opinion, the vilest and most corrupt city in the Low Kingdoms. Haven, in midwinter, gleams purest white under falls of frozen snow, and its towers shine with frost and ice like pillars of crystal, but only from a distance. The snow on the ground is a dirty gray from the unceasing factory smoke. The gray-faced people trudge wearily through the snow-choked streets. Seen up close, Haven is an ugly city, in more ways than one. Even in the early morning, when the killing cold grips the streets like a clenched fist, there is still no peace for the city. There are still deals to be made, conspiracies to be entered into, and blood to be spilled. Death is a way of life in Haven, and sudden violence the pulse of its narrow streets. And only the city guard, stretched to breaking point at the best of times, stands between the city and open, bloody chaos. Hawk and Fisher, husband and wife, and captains in the city guard, strode briskly down the crowded street toward guard headquarters, their prisoner scurrying along between them. Winter had finally come to Haven, despite everything the city weather wizards could do, and the bitter air was several degrees below freezing. The street lay ankle-deep in snow and slush, and thick icicles hung from every building. Roofs groaned under the weight of a week's accumulated snow, and the iron gray sky promised more blizzards to come. Even so, people packed the street from end to end, men, women, and children jostling each other impatiently as they hurried to and from work. No one jostled Hawk and Fisher, of course. It wouldn't have been wise. It was 8 o'clock in the morning, but so dark that street lamps still burned at every corner, their amber glare doing little to dispel the gloom. Hawk hated the winter, and not just because the recent flu epidemic hit the guard badly, leaving him and Fisher working a double shift for the third day running. Winter meant hard times in Haven, and hardest of all for the poor and destitute. In every street, in every part of the city, lay bodies stiff and cold, caught out in the freezing night because they had nowhere else to go. They ended up in sheltered doorways or huddled together under tarpaulins in back alleyways, sharing their meager warmth as best they could. Every day, the garbage squad made their rounds and hauled the bodies away, but there were always more. Hawk found a young girl once, curled in a tight little ball over a street grating. She couldn't have been more than 5 or 6 years old, her staring eyes frozen solid in her head. Hawk hated the winter, and sometimes he hated Haven, too. Captain Hawk strode tall, dark-haired, and no longer handsome. A series of old scars ran down the right side of his face, and a black silk patch covered his right eye. He told lots of stories about how he got the scars, most of them contradictory. His thick furs and official black cloak made him look impressively bulky, but underneath his winter uniform, he was lean and wiry rather than muscular, and building a stomach. He wore his shoulder-length hair loose, mostly to keep his ears warm, and kept it out of his vision with a plain leather headband. Hawk had only just turned 30, but already streaks of gray shone in his hair. At first glance, Hawk seemed like just another bravo, a sword for hire already past his prime, but few people ever stopped at a first glance. There was something about Hawk, something cold and unyielding, that gave even the most belligerent hardcase pause to think twice. On his right hip, Hawk carried a short-handled axe instead of a sword. He was very good with an axe. He'd had lots of practice. Captain Isabel Fisher walked confidently at his side, echoing her partner's stance and pace with the naturalness of long companionship. She was tall, easily 6 feet in height, and her long blonde hair fell to her waist in a single thick plate, weighted at the tip with a polished steel ball. She wore a battered and almost shapeless fur hat, pulled down low to protect her ears from the bitter cold. There was a raw-boned harshness to her face, barely softened by her deep blue eyes and generous mouth. Handsome rather than pretty, her gaze shone cool and direct, and she didn't smile much. Sometime, somewhere in the past, something scoured all the human weaknesses out of her, and it showed. She wore the same furs and cloak as Hawk, though with rather more grace and style. She wore a sword on her hip, and her skill with it was legendary, in a city not easily impressed. Hawk and Fisher maintained order, feared and respected by one and all as the toughest and most honest guards in Haven. They shared a lot of enemies, both inside and outside the guard. Their prisoner trudged along, a short, scrawny, harmless-looking man wrapped in a long fur coat topped off with a pair of furry earmuffs. His thinning black hair stuck plastered to his head with rather more grease than necessary, and he showed a permanent scowl. Benny the Weasel, not a happy man.
You're making a terrible mistake. Let's be reasonable about this.
Sorry, I'm only reasonable on weekends. And Fisher doesn't believe in being reasonable at all, says it's bad for her image.
Right.
Fisher glared horribly at a nun who hadn't got out of her way fast enough.
This is all a misunderstanding. I am a legitimate businessman.
Benny, you are a small-time villain who makes most of his money running a nasty little protection racket, advising local shopkeepers of all the awful things that might happen to them or their premises if they don't keep up the payments. Only this time you were dumb enough to do it in person, in front of Fisher and me. What's the matter, both your leg breakers down with the flu?
No, you can't get good help these days. Look, I am an important figure in the community. I know my rights. I pay my taxes. Technically, you work for me.
Then you should be pleased to be getting such value for your money. We witnessed a crime and arrested the criminal on the spot. What more do you want?
You won't get away with this! I have friends! I have influence! You won't be able to make this charge stick! I'll be out on the streets again before you can blink!
Hawk stopped and looked at the short, sorry sample of a human being.
You know, Benny, you're starting to get on my nerves. Now be a good fellow and shut your face, or I'll have Fisher take you into the nearest dark alley and reason with you for a while.
Benny glanced at Fisher, then looked quickly away when he discovered she was smiling at him. He'd heard about Fisher's idea of reasoning with people. If she did it where they lived, it tended to play hell with the furniture. Benny listened to his second thoughts, and they walked the rest of the way in silence. Guard headquarters loomed up before them, a massive, squat stone building with heavy oaken doors and arrow-slit windows. It had the look of a place constantly under siege, which wasn't far off the mark. Riots, hexes, and firebombings were a part of everyday life for the headquarters, but no one ever closed it down for more than a few hours. It had its own sorcerers, and everyone in the building went armed at all times, from the clerks to the commanders. It took a lot to disrupt the headquarters' even running, though last year's rash of possessions came close. The main doors stood open, but everyone knew that could change in a second if danger threatened. A long-established spell on the doors saw to that, and tough luck if anyone got in the way. A steady stream of people bustled in and out of the building as Hawk and Fisher approached with their prisoner. There was the usual mixture of constables and the people helping them with their inquiries, along with anxious relatives searching for the recently arrested and backstreet lawyers touting for business. And of course, there were always those who'd come to the guard for help, all with the same thinly disguised look of fear and desperation. Most people only went to the guard after trying everything else. The law was harsh and brutal and weighted heavily in favor of the rich and powerful. There were guards who were sympathetic and who would do what they could for those in real need, but for the most part, the poor had no reason to trust the guard. Like everything else in Haven, justice was for sale. Everyone had their price. Everyone except Hawk and Fisher. Benny thought fleetingly of making a run for it, then noticed that Fisher's hand was resting casually on the pommel of her sword, and quickly thought better of it. He accompanied Hawk and Fisher through the main doors and into the crowded lobby of guard headquarters. The wide, low-ceilinged room was packed from wall to wall. Mothers and grandmothers sat in little groups against the walls, chatting and gossiping and keeping a watchful eye on their children as they scampered back and forth, getting in everyone's way. None of them had any real business at headquarters, but the guard let them stay. It was the only place in that area where small children could play safely. Besides which, the guard constables found they could pick up a lot of useful information by casually listening in on the women's gossip. Over by the booking desk in the center of the lobby, a seething mob of people screamed and shouted and pleaded, together with much shedding of tears and beating of breasts. But the three desk sergeants took it in their stride. They'd heard it all before. They nodded more or less sympathetically to worried relatives, glared at the lawyers, and got on with booking the various criminals as the constables brought them forward, as though the utter bedlam around them was of absolutely no interest. Hawk and Fisher made their way through the shifting mass of bodies by sheer determination and liberal use of their elbows. Hawk got a sergeant's attention and then handed Benny over into his keeping. The sergeant fixed him with a malicious grin.
Well, 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 what have we here? Benny the Weasel McNabb. Oh, it's not often that your grace is with your loathsome company, Benny. What'd you do to upset Hawk and Fisher, huh?
Nothing! I was just minding my own business.
Your business is illegal, Benny. And if you were stupid enough to do it in front of these two, you deserve everything that happens to you.
The sharp sound cut cleanly through the surrounding babble, and a constable came over to the desk and led Benny away.
What? No! I am a legitimate businessman! I'm legal! I have friends in high places!
Hawk and Fisher watched them go.
They won't be able to hold him, you know.
Fisher looked at him sharply.
Why the hell not? We both gave evidence against him.
It'll never come to trial. Benny's right. He has friends, hard though that is to believe. The word will come down, and we'll have to let him go.
Sometimes I wonder why we bother making arrests at all. These days, it seems practically every villain and thug we meet has connections with someone higher up. Or the judge gets bribed, or the jury gets intimidated.
Ah, that's haven for you. Hey, don't be fussing at me, I just work here.
Fisher allowed Hawk to pull her away from the desk. They elbowed their way back through the crowd, glaring down any objections, and found a place by the huge open fireplace to warm their hands and take a seat for a moment. They nodded amiably to the half-dozen constables already there. None of them actually had any business that required their presence at headquarters, but none of them were that keen to give up the nice warm lobby for the freezing cold outside. Hawk turned around and lifted his cloak to warm his backside at the fire. He smiled happily and looked out over the lobby. A small group of whores, looking bright and gaudy and not a little chilly in their working finery, waited patiently to be booked, fined, and released so they could get back to work as quickly as possible. Some politician or newspaper editor must have had a sudden attack of principles or been leaned on by some pressure group and declared loudly that something should be done about the rising tide of vice in our fair city. So the guard made a big show of arresting whoever happened to be around at the time. The pimps paid the fines out of their petty cash, and business went on as usual.
Yeah.
Hawk shrugged. It was none of his business. He nodded to a few familiar faces and then tensed as one of the girls took a vicious backhand from her pimp. Hawk strode quickly over to them and dropped a heavy hand on the pimp's shoulder. The pimp spun around, knocking the hand away, and then froze as he realized who it was.
What the hell do you think you're...
He was young and muscular, with a ratty-looking mustache, dressed to the nines and proud of it. He studied Hawk warily.
What do you want, Captain? I'm clean.
You wouldn't be clean if you washed every day with sulfuric acid. You're a pimp, Sebastian, the lowest of the low. And I know you of old. I thought I warned you about maltreating your girls.
Me? Hurt my girls?
Sebastian looked around him as though to invite the world to witness his harassment.
I love my girls like sisters. Who sees they always have nice clothes to wear and looks after all their needs? They're like family to me, my girls. You just need a little firm guidance from time to time, that's all.
Your associate and business partner, that nasty little thug, Bates, is currently awaiting trial for firmly guiding one of your girls by slashing her face with a razor. I know you, Sebastian. I know you and all your nasty little ways. And if I discover you've been firmly guiding any of your girls again, I'm gonna get annoyed with you. You do remember what happened when I got annoyed with Bates, don't you?
He's making good progress. He should be out of the hospital soon.
Really? I must be losing my touch. Keep your hands off the girls, Sebastian, or your crushed fingers will be nothing but tassels at the ends of your broken hands.
Sebastian smiled and nodded as though it hurt him and disappeared into the crowd. Hawk watched him go, nodded politely to the whores who ignored him, and made his way back to the fire. Fisher knelt, playing with a few children too young to be afraid of a guard's uniform. Hawk watched for a while, smiling gently. Isabel was good with kids. They talked about having children of their own more than once, but somehow it never seemed to be the right time. The crowd backed quickly away as a prisoner who'd broken away from his escort lashed about him with a knife he'd somehow kept hidden. He grabbed for one of the children near Fisher, obviously intending to use the child as a hostage. Fisher glanced around and back-elbowed him viciously in the groin. She rose unhurriedly to her feet as the prisoner hunched forward over his pain, then rabbit-punched him. He collapsed and lay still. Fisher kicked the knife away from his hand and went back to playing with the children. Two constables dragged the unconscious prisoner away. Hawk decided, regretfully, that they'd killed about as much time as they could get away with, and they ought really to get back to the job. They were barely halfway through their second shift.
He'd tried concentrating on all the overtime they were racking up, but it didn't help. His feet were numb, his forehead still ached from the cold, and his back was killing him. Hawk hated the winter.
Come on, Isabel.
He collected Fisher, waved goodbye to the kids and their unresponsive mothers, and strode resignedly out into the waiting cold.
Oi! Over here! I need a lift! Over here!
The first thing Hawk saw was Benny the Weasel, shivering in a borrowed cloak as he tried unsuccessfully to hail a sedan chair. Hawk and Fisher looked at each other and strolled casually over to join him. Benny saw them coming and clearly thought about making a run for it, before better sense took over. He drew himself up to his full 5'6" and tried to brazen it out.
Benny, what do you think you're doing out here?
They let me go.
Benny's eyes darted from Hawk to Fisher and back again.
All the charges have been dropped. That's official. Told you I had friends.
Hawk and Fisher stepped forward, took an elbow each, and carried Benny into the nearest back alley.
Wait! What are you doing? No, you can't do this! Stop it! You can't do this!
As soon as they put him down, he tried to bolt, but Hawk snagged him easily and slammed him against the wall, just hard enough to rattle his eyes and put a temporary stop to any complaints. Hawk brought his face close to Benny's and fixed him with his single, cold eye.
No one walks when we bring the charges, Benny. Not ever. I don't care what kind of friends you've got. You are guilty as hell and you're going to stand trial.
They won't accept your evidence. The judge will let me off. You'll see.
You're not getting the message, Benny. If we let you walk, all the other scum will start thinking they can get away with things. And we can't have that, can we? So you are going to walk back into headquarters, make a full confession, and plead guilty. Because if you don't, Fisher and I will take turns thinking up ways to make your every waking minute agony.
They won't convict me on just a confession.
Well, then you'd better be sure to provide plenty of corroborative evidence, hadn't you?
Benny looked at Hawk's implacable face and then glanced at Fisher. She had a nasty-looking skinning knife in her hand and was calmly paring her nails with it. Benny studied the knife with fascinated eyes. Right then, all the awful stories he'd heard about Hawk and Fisher seemed a lot more believable than they had before.
Benny?
I think I'd like to confess, please, Captain Hawk.
You do realize you don't have to.
I want to.
Legally, you're not bound to do so.
Please, let me confess. I want to, honestly.
Good man.
Hawk stood back from him.
That's always refreshing to meet a citizen who believes in honesty and justice. Now, get in there and start talking while we're still in a good mood.
Benny ran out of the alleyway and back into guard headquarters. Fisher smiled and put away her knife. The two guards left the alley and made their way unhurriedly down the street, heading back to their beat in the north side. The north side was the rotten heart of Haven, where all that was bad in the city came to the surface, like scum on poisoned wine. Crime, corruption, and casual evil permeated the north side, where every taste and trade found satisfaction. Various gangs of drug dealers fought running battles over lucrative territories, ruthlessly cutting down any innocent bystanders in the way. Spies plotted treason behind shuttered windows, and many doors opened only to the correct whispered password. Sweatshops and crowded slum tenements huddled together under broken street lamps, and the smoke from the local factories hung permanently on the air, clawing at the throats of those who breathed it. Some said the North Side was as much a state of mind as an area, but states of mind don't usually smell that bad. Hawk and Fisher strolled through the narrow streets, nodding to familiar faces in the bustling crowd. Speed was a way of life in the North Side. There were deals to be made, slights to be avenged, and you never knew who might be coming up behind you. Hawk and Fisher rarely let themselves be hurried. You could miss things that way, and Hawk and Fisher always liked to know what was going on around them. They'd had the North Side as their beat for 5 years now, on and off. Despite their best efforts, little had changed in that time. For every villain they put away, the North Side produced two more to take his place, and the soul-grinding poverty that was at the root of most crimes never changed from 1 year to the next. In their most honest moments, Hawk and Fisher knew that all they'd really done was drive the worst crimes underground or into other areas. Things tended to be peaceful as long as they were around, but they couldn't be everywhere at once. Occasionally, one or the other would talk about quitting, but they never did. They wouldn't give up. It wasn't in their natures. They took each day as it came and helped those they could. Even little victories were better than none. The stone and timber buildings huddled together as though for warmth, their upper stories leaning out over the streets till their eaves almost touched. Piles of garbage thrust up through the snow and slush, and Hawk and Fisher had to be careful where they put their feet. The garbage collectors came once a month, and then only with an armed guard. The beggars who normally lived off the garbage had been driven from the streets by the cold, but there were still many who braved the bitter weather for their own reasons. Business went on in the North Side, no matter what the weather. Business and other things. In the light of a flickering brazier, an angel from the Street of Gods threw dice with half a dozen gargoyles. A salesman hawked bracelets plated with something that looked like gold. A large St. Bernard with a patchy dye job tried to bum a light for his cigar.
Excuse me, do you? Hey, you got a light?
Two overlarge rats with human hands worked at stealing the boots off of a dead man.
Come on, hurry up. My feet are freezing.
And two nuns labored at beating up a mugger.
Jesus.
Just another day on the North Side. The guard communication sorcerer's alarm sounded in Hawk and Fisher's heads.
Damn! I hate that. If he wasn't a sorcerer, I'd take that bell and...
Attention all guards in the North Sector.
They stopped to receive the bad news communicated telepathically by the communication sorcerer. It had to be bad news. It always was. Anything else could have waited till they got back to headquarters.
There is a riot at the Crossed Pikes Tavern in Salt Lane. There are a large number of dead and injured, including at least two constables. Approach the situation with extreme caution. There is evidence of chakal used by the rioters.
Damn.
Hawk and Fisher ran down the street, fighting the snow and slush that dragged at their boots. Salt Lane was four streets away, and a lot could happen in the time it would take them to get there. From the sound of it, too much had happened already. Hawk scowled as he ran. Riots were bad enough without drugs complicating the issue. Chakal was something new on the streets. Relatively cheap and easy enough to produce by anyone with a working knowledge of alchemy and access to a bathtub, the drug brought out the animal side of man's nature. It heightened all the senses while turning off the higher functions of the mind, leaving the user little more than a wild animal, free to wallow in the moment and indulge any whim or gratify any desire, free from reason or remorse or any stab of conscience. The drug also boosted the user's strength, speed, and ferocity, making them almost unstoppable. It burned out the user's nervous systems in time, leaving them paralyzed or mad or dead from a dozen different causes. But life wasn't worth much in the North Side anyway, and there were all too many willing to swap a hopeless future for the savage joys of the present. Hawk and Fisher charged around the last corner into Salt Lane and then skidded to a halt. A large crowd had already gathered, packing the narrow street from side to side. The two guards bulled their way through the crowd without bothering to be diplomatic about it, and quickly found themselves at the front of the crowd, facing the Crossed Pikes Tavern from a safe distance. The tavern looked peaceful enough, apart from its shattered windows, but a guard constable was sitting on a nearby doorstep, pressing a bloody handkerchief to a nasty-looking scalp wound. Blood covered half his face. He looked up dazedly as Hawk and Fisher approached him and tried to get to his feet. Hawk waved for him to stay seated.
What happened here?
The constable blinked and licked his dry lips.
My partner and I were the first here after the alarm went out. There was fighting and screaming inside the tavern, but we couldn't see anything. The crowd told us there were two constables already in there, so my partner went in to check things out while I watched the crowd. I waited and waited, but he never came back. After a while, it all went quiet, so I decided I'd just take a quick look through the door. I barely got my foot over the doorstep when something hit me. I couldn't see for the blood in my eyes, so I got out of there quick. I'll try again in a minute when I got my breath back. My partner's still in there.
Hawk clapped him on the shoulder reassuringly.
You take a rest. Fisher and I'll have a look. If any more guards come, keep them out here till we've had a chance to evaluate the situation. Are you sure it's Chakal users in there?
That's what the crowd said, but there's no way to be sure. As far as I can tell, anyone who was in that tavern when the trouble started is still in there.
Hawk squeezed the constable's shoulder comfortingly, and then he and Fisher moved off away to discuss the matter.
What do you think?
I think we should be very careful how we handle this. I don't like the sound of it at all. Three guards missing, another injured, and so spooked he can't bear to go near the place, and an unknown number of rioters who might just be out of their minds on Chakal. The odds stink. How can we never get the easy assignments?
There aren't any easy assignments in Haven. We've got to go in, Isabel. There could be innocent people trapped in there, unable to get out.
It's not very likely, Hawk.
No, it's not, but we have to check.
All right, let's do it. Before we get a rush of brains to the head and realize what a dumb idea this is. What's the plan?
Well, there's no point in trying to sneak in. If there are Shakel users in there, they'll be able to see, hear, and smell us coming long before we even get a glimpse of them. I say we burst in through the door, weapons at the ready, and hit anything that moves.
Planning never was your strong suit, was it, Hawk?
Have you got a better idea?
Unfortunately, no.
Then let's do it. Don't look so worried, though. We faced worse odds before.
Hawk drew his axe and Fisher drew her sword, and they moved cautiously over to the tavern's main entrance. The door stood ajar, with only darkness showing beyond. Bright splashes of blood marked the polished wood below a series of gouges that looked unnervingly like claw marks. Hawk listened carefully, but everything seemed still and quiet. He put his boot against the door and pushed it wide open. The two captains braced themselves, but nothing happened. Hawk hefted his axe thoughtfully and glanced at Fisher. She nodded, and they darted through the doorway together. Once inside, they moved quickly to stand apart on either side of the door so they wouldn't be silhouetted against the light, and waited silently for their eyes to adjust to the gloom. Hawk held his axe out before him and strained his ears against the silence. A fire burned fitfully at the far end of the tavern, and some light fell past the shattered windows. The tavern slowly took form out of the gloom, and Hawk could make out chairs and tables overturned and scattered across the floor, as though a sudden storm had swept through the long room, carrying all before it. Dark shapes lay still and silent among the broken furniture, and Hawk didn't need to see them clearly to know that they were bodies. He counted 14, he was sure of. He saw no sign of their killers. Hawk moved slowly forward, axe at the ready. Fisher moved at his side. He stopped by a wall lamp, and working slowly and carefully, he took out his box of matches and lit it, while Fisher stood guard. It wasn't easy lighting the lamp with one hand, but he wouldn't put his axe down. The sudden light pushed back the darkness. For the first time, Hawk and Fisher could see the full extent of the devastation. Blood showed everywhere, splashed across the walls, furniture, and pooled on the floor. Most of the bodies had been mutilated or disfigured, some torn apart. Loops of purple intestine hung limply from a lamp bracket. A severed hand beckoned from a barbecue grill by the fire. Most of the bodies had been gutted, ripped open from throat to groin. Whoever or whatever did it didn't bother to use a blade.
Oh, hell.
Fisher's knuckles showed white on her sword hilt. Hawk put the lamp back in its niche, and the two of them moved slowly forward. The tavern lay still and silent, full of the stench of blood and death. They went from body to body, methodically checking for signs of life, but there were none. They found the three guards who ran in to face what they thought was a simple riot. The only way to identify them was by their constable's scarlet cloak and tunic. Their heads were missing. Neither Hawk nor Fisher found sign anywhere of the attackers.
Did the attackers escape during the confusion? I don't think so.
Every one of his instincts screamed the killers were still there, watching and waiting for their chance. He could almost feel the weight of their gaze on his back. The tavern's bar looked a wreck. There wasn't an intact bottle or glass left on the shelves, and the floor lay covered with a thick carpet of broken glass.
Isabel.
Hawk drew Fisher's attention to the bar top. The thick slab of polished mahogany was crisscrossed with long, curving scars that made Hawk think again about claws. He looked at Fisher, who nodded slowly.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking, Hawk?
Could be. We've been working on the assumption that this was the work of Shakel users, but more and more this is starting to look like something else entirely. I don't see how anything human could have caused injuries like those, or claw marks like these. I think we've got a werewolf here, Isabel.
Fisher reached down and pulled a silver dagger from inside her boot. She held it loosely in her left hand, just in case. She moved behind the bar and then signaled quickly for Hawk to come and join her. He did so, and the two of them stood looking down at the bartender, lying wedged half under the bar. His throat had been torn out, and there were bite marks on his arms where he'd lifted them to defend himself.
Werewolf?
Maybe. I don't know. The bite marks look wrong. A wolf's muzzle would leave a larger, narrower bite.
Hawk and Fisher moved quickly out from behind the bar to give themselves room to fight. They glared about them, but nothing moved in the shadowy, blood-spattered room. A heavy weight hit Hawk from above and behind, throwing him to the floor. Hawk rolled back and forth, trying desperately to tear himself free from the creature that clung to his back, pinning his arms to his sides with its legs and reaching for his throat with clawed hands. Hawk tucked his head in, chin pressed to his chest, and then nearly panicked as he felt teeth gnawing at the back of his head. He got his feet underneath him, glanced quickly about to get his bearings, and then slammed himself back against the heavy wooden bar behind him. The creature's grip loosened as the breath was knocked out of it. Hawk pulled free, and he threw himself to one side. Fisher stepped forward in a full extended lunge, pinning the creature to the bar with her sword. For a moment, no one moved. Hawk and Fisher stared incredulously at the blood-soaked man transfixed by Fisher's sword. His clothing hung in rags, and he held his hands like claws. Blood soaked his hands and forearms like crimson gloves. More blood lay spattered thickly over his livid white flesh. His eyes stared wide. He showed his bloody teeth, but he was still just a man. He lunged forward, forcing himself along the impaling blade, his bloody hands reaching for Fisher's throat. She held her ground, watching in fascination as the jagged, nailed hands grew steadily nearer. Part of her wondered crazily what had happened to wreck his nails like that. Hawk lurched to his feet, lifting his axe. The killer lunged forward again, blood spilling down his gut from where Fisher's sword pierced him. And then Fisher lifted her hand with the silver dagger in it and cut his throat. Blood sprayed across her arm, and she watched warily as the light went out of his eyes and he slumped forward, dead at last. She pulled out her sword. The creature fell limply to the floor and lay still. Hawk came over to stand beside her.
He must have been up in the rafters all this time, just watching us and waiting.
Fisher looked up at the ceiling.
There's no one else up there, but I can't believe one man did all this. Drug or no drug?
Hawk looked down at the dead user.
Maybe we shouldn't have killed him after all. There are a lot of questions we could have asked him.
He didn't exactly give us a choice. Besides, he wouldn't have been allowed to talk. We'd have had to keep him in jail till he came down. And by then, word would have reached his suppliers. They'd either have sprung him or killed him to keep his mouth shut.
It has to be said, headquarters security isn't worth spit these days, particularly when it comes to drug arrests. You know, it wasn't this bad when we first joined the guard.
Yes, it was. We just weren't experienced enough to recognize the signs. There's a lot of money in drugs. And when there's a lot of money, there's a line of guards with their hands out.
This day started out depressing, and it's not getting any better. Let's get the hell out of here and file our report. If one Shakal user can do this much damage on a rampage, then this city is in for some interesting times.
Hawk and Fisher spun around, weapons at the ready. The tavern looked just as still and quiet as before. None of the bodies had moved. Hawk glared in the direction of the sound, and his gaze came to rest on an overturned table leaning against a wall. It was a big table, with room for one, maybe two people behind it. Hawk silently indicated the table to Fisher, and they moved slowly forward. They reached the table in a matter of moments, moving silently through the gloom. Hawk put away his axe and grabbed the rim of the table with both hands while Fisher stood ready with her sword. Fisher moved quickly forward to stand between Hawk and whatever was waiting. Both she and Hawk stood very still as the table revealed its secret. The second Shakal user was a young woman, maybe 17 or 18. Her face was bone white with dark, staring eyes, and her hands and forearms were slick with other people's blood. She held her hands like claws but made no move to attack Hawk or Fisher. Someone, presumably the other user, had ripped open her stomach. It was a wide, hideous wound that should have killed her immediately, but the Shakal was keeping her alive. She lay propped against the wall in a widening pool of her own blood, and as Hawk and Fisher watched, she dipped a hand into the ragged wound in her gut, pulled out a bloody morsel, and ate it.
Oh, dear God. She's been feeding on herself.
Hawk moved forward, put a gentle, restraining hand on the girl's arm.
Don't. Please, don't.
Get away from her, Hawk. She's still dangerous. We don't know how many people she's killed here.
Get a doctor.
Hawk!
Get a doctor!
Fisher nodded and hurried over to the main door. Hawk put the girl's hand in her lap and brushed her long, stringy hair from her face. The user looked up at him for the first time.
Something went wrong.
Hawk had to lean close to understand her. Her breath smelled of blood and something worse. Her dead white skin was beaded with sweat.
This wasn't supposed to happen. I said it would make us feel like gods. I'm cold.
I've sent for a doctor. Take it easy. Save your strength.
They lied to us.
Can you tell me what happened? You said something went wrong. What went wrong?
It was a new drug. Supposed to be the best. Like Chagall, only stronger. We were going to be like gods. We were packing it up at the factory, ready to ship it out. Leon took some for a lark. We tried it here. Just a little. And then everything went bad.
Tell me about the factory. Where is it?
The girl's hand drifted toward her wound again. Hawk stopped it and put it back in her lap.
I'm cold.
Hawk took off his cloak and wrapped it around her. Sweat ran down her face in rivulets. There was no color left in her face. Even her lips were white.
Morgan's place. The Blue Dolphin. In the hook.
All right, take it easy. That's all I need. We'll get the bastards. You rest now. The doctor will be here soon.
Would you hold my hand, please?
Sure.
Hawk took off one of his gloves and held her left hand, squeezing it comfortingly. Warm blood spilled down his wrist.
All right.
Hold it up where I can see it. I can't feel it.
Hawk started to lift her hand up before her face, but she'd stopped breathing. He was still holding her hand when Fisher came back with the guard doctor.
I didn't even find out her name.
Hawk pulled his cloak around his shoulders. Guard constables and captains, summoned to the scene by the communication sorcerer, spilled around Hawk and Fisher as they moved in and out of the Crossed Pikes Tavern. They were carrying out the dead and lining them up in neat rows on the snow, ready for the meat wagon when it arrived. The guard doctor hovered over them like an anxious relative, making notes on cause of death for when the forensic sorcerer arrived. A large crowd had gathered, but were being kept back by two constables. Hawk knelt down suddenly and started roughly cleaning the blood from his hand with a handful of snow. Fisher put a hand on his shoulder and squeezed it comfortingly.
You did all you could, Hawk.
I know that.
She killed at least a dozen people in there. Probably more.
I know that, too.
He got to his feet and pulled his glove back on.
Before she died, she told me where they're making the stuff she took. It's Robbie Morgan's place, down in the Devil's Hook.
Fisher looked at him sharply.
Standard procedure would be to contact headquarters and tell them the factory's location. Since you haven't done that, I assume there's a good reason why not?
I want these bastards, Isabel. Look what their trial run did. It's a new drug, you see. They haven't released it yet. Can you imagine what the North Side will be like once the Super Chacal hits the streets? We've got to stop it now, while we can.
So let the drug squad handle it. That's what they're paid for.
No. I'm not risking this one going wrong. You can guarantee some guard will tip Morgan off in return for a sweetener. The drug squad would get there just a little too late and find nothing but an empty warehouse. That's happened too many times just recently. So I think we'll do this one ourselves.
Us? You mean just you and me?
Isabel, please. I haven't gone completely crazy. Morgan's probably got a small army of security people protecting the Blue Dolphin. We've got a small army ourselves right here. There's a dozen constables, five captains, and even a sorceress. We'll leave a few people here to mind the store and take the rest.
On whose authority?
Mine. If we bring this off, no one's going to ask any questions.
And if we don't?
Hawk looked at her steadily.
This is important to me, Isabel. She died right in front of me, scared and hurting, and there wasn't a damn thing I can do to help her. Just this once, we've got a chance to make a difference. A real difference. Let's do it.
All right. Let's do it. But how are we going to get the others to go along on an unofficial raid?
Easy. We won't tell them it's unofficial.
I like the way you think, Hawk.
They finally ended up with an impromptu task force of 10 constables, 2 more captains, and the sorceress, Mystique. All blithely unaware that they were about to break every rule in the book, which was probably for the best. That way, if anything did go wrong, Hawk and Fisher could take all the blame on themselves. Besides, no one with the brains they were born with would have volunteered if they'd known the truth. At which point, Hawk decided very firmly that he wasn't going to think about the situation anymore. It was depressing him too much. All that mattered was shutting down the drug factory and, if possible, Morgan. Hawk had heard about Morgan. Most people in Haven had, one way or another. He'd made enough money down the years from drugs, prostitution, and murder to buy respectability. He was seen in all the best places, belonged to all the right clubs, and these days was officially regarded as above suspicion. In fact, he still had a dirty finger in every pie in Haven, though no one could prove anything. But Hawk and Fisher knew, like every other guard, they had to deal every day with the violence and suffering his businesses caused. It wasn't like Morgan to get so personally involved in a scheme like this, having the Super Chacal packed and distributed from one of his warehouses. And it also wasn't like him to get involved with such a dangerous drug. The more traditional drugs brought less publicity, were just as addictive, and therefore just as profitable. Hawk shrugged mentally. Every villain makes a mistake sooner or later, and Morgan had made a bad one. Hawk and Fisher led their people through the north side at a quick march, heading for the Devil's Hook. They made an impressive spectacle, and the crowds drew back to let them pass. It was almost like a parade, but nobody cheered. The law wasn't popular in the north side. Hawk looked back at his people and smiled to himself. They might just bring this off after all. The constables were some of the toughest guards in Haven. They had to be, or they wouldn't have been working the north side. And he knew both the captains by reputation, if not personally. Captain Andrew Doty was a medium-height, stocky man in his late 40s, a career guard with all the courage, cunning, and native caution that implied. He was blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and glacially handsome. His job was his life. He had a good enough reputation with his sword that he didn't have to keep proving it, but he liked to, given the chance. He'd patrolled with a lot of partners in his time, but worked best alone, mostly because he didn't trust anyone but himself. Captain Howard Burns was a tall, lean man in his late 30s, with an unruly mop of dark hair and a thick spade beard. He was an expert in personal and company security, and worked mostly in the west side, overseeing the transfer of money or valuables from one location to another. He took his work very seriously, and had several official commendations for bravery. He had no sense of humor at all, but then no one's perfect. Certainly not in Haven. Hawk worked with both of them in his time, and he was glad he had someone apart from Fisher to watch his back this time. They were both good men, men he could depend on. The only real wild card in the pack was the sorceress, Mystique. She was new to the guard, and still looking for a chance to show what she could do. Mystique was a tall, slender, fluttering woman in her early 30s, dressed in sorcerer's black, carefully cut in the latest fashion to show lots of bare flesh. If the cold bothered her at all, she didn't show it. She had a long face and a friendly, toothy grin that made her look 10 years younger.
Well, winter's certainly arrived. I doubt any magic would suffice to clean these streets while holding back further snowfall.
Despite the questions her upper-class accent raised, she wouldn't say anything about her background. She wore a thick mass of long, curly black hair she kept sweeping back out of her eyes. Altogether, she wasn't exactly the most organized person Hawk had ever met, but she was supposed to be very good at what she did, and he'd settle for that. Morgan's warehouse would undoubtedly be crawling with defensive magic and booby traps. The only real problem with Mystique was that she hardly ever seemed to stop talking, and she wore literally dozens of beads and bangles and bracelets that clattered loudly as she walked. Hawk made the mental note not to include her in any plans that involved sneaking up on the enemy. Then they came to the Devil's Hook, and Mystique's chatter stumbled to a halt. Even casual conversation died away quickly as Hawk led his people into the hook. It was a bad place to be, and they all knew it. The Devil's Hook was the single poorest, most decayed, and most dangerous area in Haven. A square mile of slums and alleyways backing onto the main docks, the hook held more crime, corruption, and open misery than most people could bear to think about. The squalid tenement buildings filled to overflowing with sweatshops paying starvation wages for work on goods that often fetched high prices in the better parts of the city. Child labor flourished alongside malnutrition and disease. No one ventured into the stinking streets alone or unarmed. The guard patrolled the hook very loosely rather than risk open warfare with the gangs who ran it. The gangs weren't as powerful as they once were, thanks to some sterling work by the sorcerer Gaunt. But after he left Haven, the bad times returned as new gangs established themselves and fought for territory, to the surprise of nobody. No one complained. The hook was where you ended up when you had nowhere else to go but a pauper's grave. All in all, the perfect spot for a new drug factory. The Blue Dolphin, a squalid little lockup warehouse, slouched on one end of a rotting tenement. Chemicals from nearby factories stained and pitted the stonework, and all the windows were boarded up. It was cheaper than shutters. Hawk raised his hand, and the squad came to a stop outside the warehouse. The street lay deserted before them, but Hawk could feel the pressure of watching eyes. The squad quickly set up a defensive perimeter. The last thing they needed was a gang attack while they were occupied with the drug factory. Fisher moved in close beside him.
Are you sure this is the right place, Hawk? If Morgan's got a packing and distribution set up here, he's gonna need a lot more room than this pokey little warehouse.
This is the place. Hope that sounded more convinced than I feel. When all is said and done, all we're going on is the dying words of a girl already out of her mind on Chacao. Never mind, just get on with it. I believed the girl then. I have to believe her now. Or she died for nothing.
There are mystic wards all over the place.
Hawk hadn't heard Mystique come up behind him. The sorceress smiled briefly and then turned her attention back to the warehouse.
I can't quite make out what kind of wards, though. Given the circumstances, I think we ought to tread carefully, just in case.
Hawk nodded and gestured to two of the constables. They moved forward and cautiously tried the warehouse door. It was locked, which surprised no one. One constable kicked the door. His clothes burst into flames that leapt up around him in seconds. He staggered back, beating at his blazing clothes with his hands.
Get down in the snow! Get down and roll! We'll put out the flames!
Another constable quickly pulled him down and rolled him back and forth in the snow to smother the flames. Hawk scowled. He hadn't expected to hit a magic defense this quickly. He made sure the injured constable would be all right, and then he turned to the sorceress.
Get us in there, Mystique. I don't care how you do it, but do it fast. They know we're here now.
The sorceress nodded eagerly, her earrings jangling accompaniment. She stared thoughtfully at the door, and wisps of fog began to appear around her, circling and twisting in the still air. The misty gray strands grew thicker, undulating disturbingly as they drifted away from the sorceress toward the warehouse door. The mists looked almost alive and purposeful. They curled around the door, seeping past the edges and sinking into the wood itself. Mystique made a sudden sharp gesture and the door exploded. Fragments and splinters of rotting wood rained down on the guards as they shielded themselves with their cloaks. Where the door had been, there was now nothing but an impenetrable darkness. Mystique turned to look at Hawk. Strands of fog still swirled around her like ethereal serpents, with no beginning or end.
Fast enough for you, darling?
Very impressive. Can you tell us anything about what's beyond the doorway?
That's the bad news, I'm afraid. The darkness is a dimensional gateway leading to a small pocket dimension, the inside of which is a damn sight bigger than that lockup. I've knocked out the protective ward so we can get in there, but I've absolutely no idea of what might be waiting for us. Sorry to be such a drag, but whoever designed this beastly setup was jolly good at his job.
All right. We'll just have to take it as it comes. Brace yourselves, people. We're going in. I want Morgan alive, and preferably intact so we can ask him questions. Anyone else is fair game. I prefer prisoners to corpses, but don't put yourselves at risk. We don't know what kind of odds we'll be facing. Try not to wreck the place too much. You never know what might turn out to be useful evidence. Right, let's do it.
He hefted his axe and walked forward, Fisher and Mystique on either side of him. From behind came a brief whisper of steel on leather as the guards drew their weapons and started after him. Hawk gritted his teeth and plunged into the darkness. There was a sharp moment of intense heat, and then he burst through into Morgan's factory. His first sight of the place was almost enough to stop him in his tracks, but he forced himself to keep going to make room for the others coming behind. Morgan's warehouse was an insane mixture of planes and angles and inverted stairways that could not have existed in anything but a pocket universe. There was no up or down in any way that made any sense. People walked on one side of a surface or another, or on both, and gravity seemed merely a matter of opinion. Simple wooden stairways connected the various level planes, twisting and turning around each other like mating snakes. Walls became floors, became ceilings, depending on which way you approached them. Hawk shook off his disorientation and concentrated on the force of armed men rushing toward him from a dozen different directions. He didn't have to count them to know his own small group was vastly outnumbered.
Mystique! Take out the stairways! Bring this place down around their ears!
I'm afraid we have a slight problem, dear.
The sorcerer stared off into the distance.
Morgan has his own sorcerer here. And I'm rather tied up at the moment, keeping him from killing us all.
Can you take him?
Probably, if you stop interrupting. And if you can keep those nasty-looking men-at-arms away from me.
All right, people, form a barrier between Mystique and the thugs. Captains Doty and Burns, guard Mystique!
Fisher looked at Hawk.
And what are we going to do?
Find Morgan. I'm not taking any chances on his getting away. Mystique, when you're ready, don't wait for orders from me. Just trash the place.
Mystique nodded, absorbed in her sorceress battle. Thick strands of fog twisted around her like dogs straining at a leash. Hawk and Fisher bolted down a rickety wooden stairway. They hadn't gone far when Hawk heard the first clash of steel as his people met the men-at-arms. He didn't look back. In what might have been the center of the mad tangle of planes and stairways was a more or less open area with a lot of excited movement. It seemed as good a place as any to start looking. The stairs turned and twisted under Hawk, and he quickly learned to keep his gaze on his feet and ignore what was going on around him. Men-at-arms came charging toward Hawk, six men in the lead, with a lot more on the way. Bad odds on a rickety wooden staircase. He looked quickly about him and grinned as he spotted a large flat plane not too far away. It stood at right angles to him, but then so did the two men on it, frantically packing paper parcels into two large crates on a wide table. He looked back at Fisher and pointed at the plane. She raised an eyebrow and then nodded sharply. The two captains of the guard clambered up onto the narrow wooden banister, which creaked dangerously under their weight, and leapt out into space toward the right-angled plane. Gravity changed suddenly as they left the stairs and slammed them down hard on the bare wooden plane. Hawk and Fisher hit the floor rolling and were quickly up on their feet again. The two men packing were already done. Hawk hefted one of the small paper parcels and then looked at the size of the packing case. That crate could hold an awful lot of drugs, if it was drugs. A horrible thought struck him, and he opened the packet and sniffed cautiously at the gray powder inside. He relaxed slightly. It was Shakal. The sharp, acidic smell was quite distinctive.
Hawk, above!
Hawk threw the packet aside and looked up. A man-at-arms leaned out from an upside-down stairway overhead and cut at Hawk with his sword. Hawk parried with his axe, but he couldn't reach high enough to attack the man. He backed away, and the swordsman moved along the stairway after him. There was a strange dreamlike quality to the fight, with both men upside down to the other. But Hawk knew better than to let the strangeness distract him. If he couldn't figure out a way to get at his opponent, he was a dead man. An axe wasn't made for defense. He bumped into the table, and an idea struck him. He grabbed the open packet and threw the Shakal powder into the other man's face. The man-at-arms dropped his sword to claw at his eyes with both hands.
Hawk!
What?
Hawk spun around to find Fisher standing at the edge of the plane, fighting off three of the five men-at-arms who jumped down off the banister after the guards. Two already lay dead at her feet. Hawk sprinted over to join her, ducked under the first man's sword, and swung his axe in a vicious sideways arc. The heavy steel axe head punched through the man's chainmail and buried itself in his ribcage. Bones broke and splintered, and the impact drove the man-at-arms to his knees, coughing blood. Hawk yanked the axe free and booted the man off the edge of the plane. The dying man fell upwards out of sight. Fisher had already cut down another of her opponents and now stood toe-to-toe with the last remaining adversary. Hawk started forward to help her and then stopped. He saw more men-at-arms running down a winding stairway to join the fight. Fisher saw them too and quickly kneed her opponent in the groin.
Get the hell out of here, Hawk. Find Morgan. I'll hold them off.
She cut her opponent's throat and sidestepped neatly to avoid the jetting blood.
Move it, Hawk!
Hawk nodded abruptly and turned and ran down the other stairway, heading once again for what had looked like the center of operations. Fisher met the first of the new onslaught, but Hawk didn't look back. He didn't dare. He pressed on through the maze, passing from stairway to plane to stairway. All around him, Morgan's people were running back and forth, looking for orders or weapons or just heading for the exit. Morgan wouldn't have gone, though. This was his place, his territory, and he trusted his men and his sorcerer to protect him. Looked up and around in time to see a man dressed in sorcerer's black stagger drunkenly across a plane at right angles to Hawk's stairway. Streamers of thick, milky fog burst out of his mouth and eyes and ears. His head swelled impossibly and then exploded in a spreading cloud of crimson mist. The body crumpled to the floor as the last echo of the sorcerer's dying cry faded slowly away. Hawk grinned. So much for Morgan's sorcerer. He was close to the center now. He could feel it. Drugs and people and men-at-arms crowded his field of vision, and there, straight ahead, he saw a familiar face in an earth-brown cloak and hood. Morgan. Hawk ran forward, cutting his way through two swordsmen foolish enough to try and stop him. Their blood splashed across his face and hands, but he didn't pause to wipe it off. He couldn't let Morgan escape. He couldn't. Morgan looked once at the blood-stained guard rushing toward him, and then continued stuffing papers into a leather pouch. Three men-at-arms moved forward to stand between Hawk and Morgan. Hawk hit them at a dead run, swinging his axe double-handed. He never felt the wounds he took, and when it was all over, he stepped across their dead bodies to advance slowly on the drug baron. Seen up close, Morgan didn't look like much. Average height and build, with a bland face, perhaps a little too full to be handsome. A mild gaze and a civilized smile. He didn't look like the kind of man who'd made his fortune through the death and suffering of others. But then they never did. Hawk moved slowly forward. Blood ran thickly down from a wound in his left thigh and squelched inside his boot. There was more blood soaking his arms and sides, some of it his. Even so, Morgan had enough sense not to try and run. He knew he wouldn't make it. They stood facing each other.
Who are you? Why are you doing this?
I'm every bad dream you ever had. I'm a guard who can't be bought.
Morgan shook his head slowly as a father chides a son who has made an understandable mistake.
Everyone has his price, Captain. If not you, then certainly someone among your superiors. I'll never come to trial. I know too much. About too many people. And I really do have friends in high places. Quite often, I helped put them there. So I'm afraid all this blood and destruction has been for nothing. You won't be able to make a case against me.
You're the second person to tell me that today. He was wrong, too. You're going to hang, Morgan. I'll come and watch.
There was a muffled sound from behind a drapery to their right. Morgan glanced at it and then looked away quickly. For the first time, he seemed a little uneasy. Hawk moved slowly over to the curtain, unconsciously favoring his wounded leg.
What's behind here, Morgan?
Experimental animals. We had to test the drug to establish the correct dosage. Nothing that would interest you.
Hawk swept the cloth to one side and froze for a moment. Inside a crude, steel-barred cage lay a pile of dead young men and women tangled together. Some were barely teenagers. The bodies lay torn and mutilated. It was clear most of them died tearing at each other and themselves. One man's hand was buried to the wrist in another's ripped-open stomach. A young girl had torn out her own eyes. Their blood coursed everywhere, but not enough to hide the characteristic colorless white skin of Shakal use. Hawk turned back to Morgan, who stood frozen.
Where did you get them?
Runaways, debtors' prisons, even a few volunteers. There are always some ready to risk their lives for a new thrill.
You know what this new drug does? Why are you getting involved with it? There isn't enough bribe money in the world to make the guard overlook the slaughter this shit will cause. Even the other drug barons would turn against you over something like this.
I won't be here when it breaks. There's a lot of money in this. Millions of ducats. More than enough to leave Haven and set up a new and very comfortable life somewhere else. You could have a life like that, Captain. There's enough money for everyone. Just name your price, and I guarantee you I can meet it.
Really?
Hawk stepped forward suddenly, grabbed a handful of Morgan's robe, and dragged him over to the steel cage.
Do you want to know my price, Morgan? Bring them back to life. Bring those poor bastards back. Go on. Give just one of them his life back, and I'll let you go, here and now.
You're being ridiculous, Captain, and very foolish.
You're under arrest. Tell your people to lay down their weapons and surrender.
Or?
Believe me, Morgan, you don't want to know.
I'll have to speak to my sorcerer first.
Don't bother, he's dead.
Morgan looked at him blankly, and then open terror rushed across his face.
We've got to get out of here! If he's dead, this whole place could collapse at any moment! It's only his magic that kept it stable!
Stupid ass! Tell your men to surrender! Do it!
Stop! Stop fighting! Lay down your arms! Surrender to the guards!
All over the maze of planes and stairways, the fighting came to a halt.
Get everybody out through the portal. We don't have much time!
The guards began herding Morgan's people toward the dimensional portal. Hawk dragged Morgan along himself, never once releasing his grip on the drug baron's robe. The stairway began to sway and tremble under their feet. A nearby plane cracked across from end to end. Streams of dust fell from somewhere high above. The wooden handrail turned to rot and mush under Hawk's hand.
For God's sake, man! Hurry!
Mystique appeared out of nowhere in a clattering of beads and bracelets and ran beside them as they hurried toward the portal.
So you did get the little rat after all. Well done, darling.
I wish you wouldn't call me that in front of the men. Can you use your magic to hold this place together long enough for us all to get out?
I'm doing my best, darling, but it's not really my field. We should all make it, if we're lucky.
They reach the portal to find it bottlenecked by the last of Morgan's people.
Idiots! Let me through! Let me through!
Hawk held back the frenzied drug lord. The remaining stairways broke apart and collapsed. The plane spun and twisted in midair, fraying at the edges. Loose magic snapped on the air like disturbed static. The last of Morgan's people went through, and Hawk and Morgan and Mystique followed the guards out. The cold of the street hit Hawk like a blow, and his vision clouded briefly as pain and fatigue caught up with him. He shook his head and pushed the tiredness back. He didn't have time for it now.
Get him back to headquarters. He will not escape from you if you want to be able to sleep comfortably at night, I promise you.
He handed Morgan over to two constables and looked around for familiar faces. Fisher appeared out of nowhere, safe and more or less sound. They compared wounds for a moment and then hugged each other carefully. Captain Burns came over to join them as they broke apart. He looked bloodied and battered and just a little dazed.
How many did we lose?
5 constables and Captain Doty. Would have been worse, I suppose. Though I won't tell Doty's widow that. Did you get Morgan?
Yeah, Hawk got him.
The whole tenement behind them collapsed.